Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we've got a subject matter that really I think is a very important one. What is that? Male's health. And my guest today, Dr. Jay Cohen, has put together, I think, an awesome publication because it's dealing with a condition that men today are being diagnosed with quite frequently. Men, years ago, they didn't even live to be past 55. Well, today, men can enjoy a lifespan that could go 70s, 80s, maybe even close to 100. But what's the consequence of that sometimes? Well, we may end up getting a physical condition that nobody really knew too much about. Well, we're going to be discussing one of those conditions that men can be afflicted with, and Dr. Jay Cohen will be giving us more specifics on this. We're going to be talking about prostate cancer and breakthroughs regarding this. I want to welcome to the show Dr. Jay Cohen. Doctor, thank you for being with us. Do you mind if I call you Dr. Jay?
You're welcome to. Many people do.
All right. I was so impressed with this material because I have heard of so many men. In fact, I had a very, very dear friend of many years that got diagnosed with it, and when he passed, he was in his 80s, and he went through some interesting experiences, and I remember him telling me about it many years ago, and I go, wow, this is really heavy stuff, prostate cancer. Well, you bring a whole new perspective to this. What happened that made you say, we've got to look at this differently?
Oh, yeah, I need to tell your audience, my background has nothing to do with urology or oncology, cancer, anything like that. I began as a general physician back in the early 70s, then went to UCLA with a group, and we did the first studies in acupuncture, which we had just learned about when Nixon went to China. My background since then has been in a couple areas. One is pharmacology, and I've written books about the drug industry and how they put out medications that are far too strong for a large portion of the population, why that happens and what people can do. And I also practice psychiatry, psychopharmacology, and my perspective is integrative. I don't care if it's mainstream or alternative. Whatever works and whatever is safest, that's what I recommend. So when I was diagnosed with prostate cancer back in December 2011, I was pretty... You know, I was no more knowledgeable than the average man who was diagnosed. I mean, I understand medical lingo pretty well, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know that 240,000 men a year are diagnosed with prostate cancer. I didn't know that 30,000 American men die of it every year and 280,000 men worldwide. I also didn't know that... that the far great majority of men with prostate cancer diagnosed today get the really rough treatments of prostate surgery, which is a difficult surgery, or radiation therapy. And that as I gradually learned as I went through the process and was scheduled for surgery, that a whole new wave of technology and a whole new wave of treatment are already taking shape and available that allowed me to better diagnose what I had and to avoid those kinds of treatments, invasive treatments.
Well, I think that the stats that you give in your book are just incredible. And when you think of tens of thousands of men that are being diagnosed with this, and how many physicians themselves that are treating these men don't even know of these alternative situations. For example, a statement, 85% of men with prostate cancer won't die from it. They will not die from it. And there's only about maybe 15% that could really be at risk, because there may be some other things that are going on. And to quote your words, the tragedy is that most men don't know this. And that goes for the physicians as well as their patients. And I just went, whoa, this is something we really need to be able to bring out.
Now, well, that's why I wrote the book. You know, I've written many other books on medical issues for readers, for regular readers and health-oriented mm-hmm. people, usually on safer ways to do things, you know, natural remedies for migraine headaches, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, etc. And as I went through this process, I was just shocked. You know, I went through the usual process that men do today. My PSA had jumped up and was high, and we retested, and that was high. So we did a biopsy, which is, I now realize, is what we call a blind biopsy, that did find cancer of a low grade. And because of the high PSA and because of the finding of cancer, they said, well, you need surgery or radiation. And I just went along. I liked my doctors. They were good doctors. They were knowledgeable and experienced. And I went on the schedule to obtain surgery. And just in between those moments, I went to a group where I learned that there are now new tests. You know, when you think mm-hmm. about it, in that situation, I didn't even know. I mean, all I knew is I had cancer. We knew it was on the left side. We didn't know anything more about it. We didn't know if it was a big cancer or a small cancer. We didn't know if it had spread elsewhere. It was quite an amazing situation. And when you think about it, you know, there's no other surgery where we know so little. And mm-hmm. one of these people in the support group said to me, well, you know, there are MRIs now that can tell you what you have more precisely. Now, MRI has not been available for prostate cancer because the prostate is so deep into the pelvis, it's been very difficult to get a clear picture of it. But mm-hmm. now there are MRIs, at least at some of the medical centers, and these are big centers. These aren't, you know, little known. I mean, this is at UCLA. This is at Sloan Kettering and Cancer Hospital in New York. This is at the Mayo Clinic. And I went ahead and got an MRI, and it finally answered these questions. It showed me what I had and where it was, and it was a rather small, medium-sized cancer nodule on the left side of my prostate, but it was in this middle zone. It wasn't near any structures. It wasn't encroaching on the edge of the prostate. It wasn't a threat of any kind. And I finally went and saw another doctor. My own urologist doctor said, well, the MRIs aren't ready, and we don't do them here. So I went and found somebody else who actually was aware of what was going on, and I met with him. And he did another test. It's called a color Doppler ultrasound. And this is another way that they can look at the prostate right there in the doctor's office. And he showed me as he's doing this test, and he said, well, here on the screen, this is the area we're concerned about. I could see it. And it pretty much confirmed that the MRI was right on. So mm-hmm. this opened up a whole new other range of possibilities for treatment, that none of which were as extreme or potentially harmful as the radical prostatectomy surgery or the radiation.
Now, one of the things that you encourage men to do is to have an annual PSA test, because you say this is important, especially after a certain age. And you mentioned something about previously yourself having had prostate infections. And this is something that men, obviously, they can go through this, and this can cause concern. So knowing your background and your history and some various things, it's so very important. But your comment in your book, you mentioned the blind biopsy that was done on you. You say the blind biopsies miss about 20% of the prostate information, and you just really, you know, you were warned by a Dr. Summers about the possibility of excess bleeding or infection, but you said you weren't warned that due to this prostate biopsy. It could cause you to end up being hospitalized.
Well, let's talk about
that. My goodness, that is really something that I don't think men have a clue about.
Yeah, let's talk about each of those separately, the PSA and the biopsy.
Okay.
Let's start with the PSA because it's the first thing that is done and should be done. Now, this has actually been on the news a lot recently because about a year ago, a federal panel said, let's stop doing the PSA test. This is prostate-specific antigen, and that's a protein that the prostate releases into the bloodstream normally. But when there's cancer, because the cancer cells create more of it, it will go up. So this has been our early warning sign of a problem. Now, the reason the panel said let's not do it anymore, it was because many doctors were, if the PSA went up, were jumping the gun. They were doing biopsies that weren't really needed, and sometimes these biopsies would find little small cancers, but they would then rush men to prostate surgery or radiation, and a lot of what harm was done. This surgery or radiation can permanently impair men's bladder control and sexual functioning and have other adverse effects.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt that, well, let's stop doing the PSA. But the problem with that is the same thinking that comes with let's not do mammograms in women anymore because we might find something and we might treat it improperly. PSA is very important. It's very well known that when PSA testing came along around 1990, it reduced the number of prostate cancer deaths by 50%. So we need the PSA testing, but we need to understand it's a general test. It may represent, an elevation may represent prostate cancer, but it may represent an infection. It may represent an enlarged prostate. It may represent sexual activity the night before when more PSA is released. And there's a number of other things it might represent. So part of what I put in the book, the name is Prostate Cancer Breakthroughs, is enough information there about PSA and how to interpret it so people who read the book can put a little rein on their doctors and not let the doctors get carried away and recommend biopsies that may not be necessary. Now, that takes us to the biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
Current biopsy methods are, if your PSA is high and it's tested a couple times and all the other possibilities are ruled out, then a biopsy is done, and at that point it is appropriate. Now, the way biopsies are done now is, again, it's done in the office, it's done through the rectum, and the doctor will use a probe and take out about 12 pieces of the prostate from all different directions. And we call that a blind biopsy because they're just doing it in the dark, just trying to get pieces of different areas, and that's the way it's been done. But now, with the MRI available, some doctors are beginning to use the MRI first, one, to see if there really are any areas that are worth biopsying. If your MRI comes back perfectly clean, then maybe the biopsy can be withheld.
Mm-hmm.
If there is some areas of suspicion in the MRI, the biopsy can then be targeted, the needle can be targeted specifically to those areas of concern, and the likelihood is that it will be much more accurate in terms of telling a man whether he actually does have prostate cancer or not. So this is beginning to be implemented in a couple different places in the U.S.
Now, you talk about the MRI, and you mention two different types of machines. It's an MRI 3.0 Tesla machine, which I found very interesting, and then also a 1.5 Tesla MRI will usually do very nicely. Now, with both of those, I'm assuming that there's a radiation dosage of exposure that you get with that. Have they refined it so that it is really quite minimal?
I believe so. The difference between the two, the 1.5 has been the state-of-the-art, but now that they have the bigger, more precise, even better delineated findings, the 3.0 Tesla, which is a measurement of the intensity and the clarity, is the preferred machine. Now, the MRIs, these MRIs right now, like I said, are available maybe in a half dozen, maybe a dozen places in the U.S. But they, I believe, with time and as this information becomes better known, they will become available in more readily. And people, you know, men who are in this spot where I was can call around probably to the major medical centers closest to them and find out if it's available. But one of the reasons I wrote the book, another reason was that I have learned through my other writings and my speaking at the FDA and other places, change comes slowly in the medical system. It takes a while, one, for this new technology to be published. It takes, you know, a study of 7 years to say, well, we followed this up and, you know, this is what we find. And then it takes another 3 or 4 years to do other studies to confirm or discount the first reports. And then, after all that, then the boards of the, you know, American Urological Association and other areas especially, they have to then review all the information. The government reviews the information, and they have to decide, is this worth recommending, and will Medicare or insurance companies pay for it? So it's a long process. So one of the reasons I wrote the book is I thought, you know, this information, I really just avoided surgery by the, you know, the skin of my teeth, and there now are so many other possibilities for men that men need to know this, or the women who do often do the reading in the family need to know this for their men. You know, one in every 6 men you know will ultimately develop prostate cancer. And my feeling was, let's get this information out. I believe, and have always believed, that if you inform the public, and the public takes this information and the list of questions I provide in the book to the doctors, they can basically, without being pushy, just by asking questions, tell the doctors they want to know about all these things, and the doctors better get with it and look at these new technologies. And I think things can be moved forward more quickly that way.
Well, I agree with you, and I know that through the years, many times, like, I've had friends, they're like me, they're always open to new concepts and ideas, and I can remember being informed by a friend about, gee, you could do this, this, and this, this is what I've showed my doctor, I read this article, and fortunately, her physician is very open to it. She was a physician that said, gee, if you find out something, let me know, because they can't keep up with everything, and that's something that, when we become aware that there are other options, then we also need to take the initiative. And just like you, a lot of people can avoid it. When you have information on the color Doppler ultrasound, it reduces the need for invasive tests. You talk about 1,200,000 prostate biopsies are performed each year just in the United States. And there's a Dr. Schultz that says this is 600,000 too many. Because if a color Doppler ultrasound was performed before each prostate biopsy, lots of times it might not even show cancer, and the biopsy could be postponed. Whoa! I mean, I don't know of anybody that likes being stuck and probed and
especially down
cut
there
and manipulated. It's not fun, and you've got a healing process after that's done as well.
Well, so, Dr. Schultz is the doctor I have worked with subsequently. And he's extremely knowledgeable, and he does the color Doppler, which I said we did on me as a confirmation test for the MRI. And in the doctor's office, in his office, if the color Doppler does show something, you know, suspicious, he can right then and there do a biopsy right there in the office using the color Doppler as his guide. So it will be a guided biopsy rather than a blind biopsy. He also, and he's an oncologist, he's not a urologist. You know, people have to remember, men have to think about the doctor they usually go to if their PSAs are high, or the urologist. And the urologists are the ones who help interpret the PSA and decide whether a biopsy should be done and whether surgery or radiation should be contemplated. And you have to recall that the urologists are surgeons. Now, I've met some really good urologists, but a surgeon looks at things from one point of view that other doctors look at from another. So you have to understand, the man has to understand, and the family has to understand that the urologist is one point of view. what I say in the book and what I try to help men do in the book is to understand what each of these things mean, when they should be done and when they should not be done. And then I really encourage men to obtain all the tests they need, ask all the questions they want, and get as many opinions as are required to finally feel comfortable with the plan. Because this is, in most cases, a slow-growing cancer. Mm-hmm. Men hear the word cancer, and it shocks them. Number of heart attacks triples in the 3 months after men are told they have prostate cancer. The number of suicides doubles. So a lot of men, under the stress of it and not understanding, will say, well, okay, if it's cancer, let's just cut it out and get rid of it and be done with it. And I know that mentality because I was there. I was there at some point. Like, okay, we got to do it. Let's just do it, and I'll have to deal with it when it's over. But there's a lot of information this book could really change a man's thinking as to what he might have, how to really define as precisely as possible what it is, and then the many more broad choices he might have in terms of treatment, if any treatment at all is really necessary.
Well, you also have the listings of facilities. You have a listing of the medical centers using the prostate MRI. And like you said, it's not a big amount, but it gives you a beginning. And then also the resources for the color Doppler ultrasound testing you give information about. But one thing I wanted to discuss that was especially significant to you. We hear about women doing this all the time, but we don't often talk about men doing it, and that is having a support group. And I thought, gee, this is great, because being a female, obviously, I don't have a prostate problem. I wouldn't have a clue about how it would feel or what you're going through as a male, just like a male isn't likely to understand what it's like for me as a woman if there's cervical cancer or anything like this, the emotions we go through. But to have a support group, and women are so good at this. Guys aren't, but you were told by someone to look for these groups, and they really helped you. Tell us about how you reached out and what this really did for you on so many levels.
Well, my experiences are two types of support groups. There's one group of men who are post-surgery or post-radiation, and they meet to talk about how they cope with the adverse effects of those therapies. But another kind of support group may have men who are. In fact, the support group I am in have many men who are already post-treatment. But they're really men who are interested in the whole idea and the whole area of prostate cancer and how to help other men. And as part of that, they take the responsibility of reading everything that comes out, hot off the press, keeping up with the studies that come out. And consequently, they have a fund of knowledge which can equal or exceed some of the doctors you might meet. And they're more interested in cutting-edge treatments and tests because they are looking to find ways to help other men who are now newly diagnosed, as I was, look at other options. So I happen to, fortunately, end up and meet the men in this latter type of group, and it really opened my eyes to possibilities. And the first thing they recommended was the MRI, which I think will be the test that really will turn things now. You know, one of the reasons that doctors have rushed men to surgery and radiation is, in the past, if you had a little prostate cancer somewhere, it was widely believed that you had probably in many, many places of your prostate. And therefore, that's why they really went to the extreme to take out prostate cancers when there was any doubt whatsoever. They didn't want to miss somebody and then have that man die slowly and painfully of prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And they never had the ability to look into the prostate and find out, well, what really was going on. I spoke to three surgeons in my decision-making here, and they were all really good surgeons. I know two of them and who they are personally. And they all said, you know, you have to do this because you'll probably have in all these other areas. So the MRI, I said, well, why don't I get an MRI? What's to lose? If I don't think the results are reliable, I can always just put it aside. And I got the MRI, as I said before, and it showed one cancer in one place, and it wasn't anywhere else. Now, there was a study that came out just about a year ago, Cleveland Clinic, New England Journal of Medicine, you know, top-of-the-line information. And they did a study, and they looked into men's prostates after they had surgery, and they found two-thirds, it wasn't spread all over, two-thirds really didn't need the surgery. So although some of those men did need the surgery, and when it's needed, I'm all for it. I'm not against surgery. If it's needed,
sure,
men should get it. But two-thirds of those men didn't really need it. So now, with the new MRI and color Doppler, especially the MRI, we're going to be able to tell what men really do need surgery and what men do not. And I really want to help men who are told they need surgery to make sure to get this test where, however and wherever they can, and really clarify what they have and do they really need that treatment. Now, let me just add before we finish, there are other treatments. If a man has an MRI like mine that shows cancer mainly on one side, you don't have to get a radical prostatectomy. You don't have to have radiation of the whole prostate area. There are new treatments, one of which is called high-intensity focused ultrasound, also known as HIFU. And if you put in the letters HIFU into your search engine and just hit search, you're going to see pages and pages and pages of information. This is a ultrasound method. It basically produces intense heat on the end of a probe, and basically you can burn off the whole prostate, but it's not really used for that so much. You can burn off half of the prostate or a quarter of the prostate, only the area you need to do, and by doing so, you avoid all the other structures and you avoid all the other longer-term problems and side effects with a much lower rate of these problems. A second one, and that, by the way, HIFU is already done all over the world. It's in trials here. It'll probably be approved within a year or two or three. It's already offered up in Canada. I believe a Cleveland Clinic has a clinic up in Canada, and they offer it there. So this is a widely accepted procedure, especially useful for men who don't need an entire removal of prostate. Another is called cryosurgery, and they use the opposite technology. They use a probe that will cause deep freezing, complete freezing of an area. The technology is getting better and better, and now it's being adapted for half a prostate or just a section of the prostate. Again, if you have a solitary lesion, one part of one half of your prostate can be used, can be treated this way. And again, the adverse effects and ramifications are less.
I just think this is so wonderful because just what you're mentioning in techniques, this can go over into other areas of treatment, and it can radically change and really enforce the medical adage of do no harm first. Do
Absolutely.
No harm. And I think that that is so important. And quickly, I just want to mention some of the things that you have here. You have a section, it's a table in your book, A Better Approach for Diagnosing Prostate Cancer. One, if you have elevated PSA level, gentlemen, then you need to, two, get a digital rectal exam and ultrasound to measure prostate size. Then, three, if there's a possible infection or problem, get it treated. Four, obtain another PSA test after it's treated if your test again is elevated. Five, get a color Doppler ultrasound or advanced prostate MRI. And six, avoid a blind biopsy and get instead a targeted biopsy via color Doppler ultrasound or new MRI-guided biopsy. 7, if a biopsy does reveal cancer, consider getting a second pathology analysis from a different center or institution. 8, join a support group, do your research, and search the Internet. 9, collect your data, assess it with your doctor, ask questions. 10, get a second opinion then. And last but not least, decide on the treatment. Dr. J, this has just been fabulous, and I know you've got a website that people can go to medicationsense.com. That's medication and sense, S-E-N-S-E, like common sense, medicationsense.com. I'm just thrilled that you have put this publication out because we don't hear people talking about this situation. And you guys, if you want to have a real rich life, knowing this is so important. It empowers you so that your health can be optimum and you don't have to be terrified of the unknown because now there is opportunity of choice. And I think that's wonderful. I think it's great for the doctors. I think it's a win-win all the way around. And I so appreciate you taking the time to put this down in print so people can get it. Again, for those of you listening, Dr. Jay Cohen, MD, medicationsense.com. This book is called Prostate Cancer, New Tests, New Treatments, Better Option, Prostate Cancer Breakthrough. This is a must-read. If you have a loved one, a friend, anyone that has someone that's affected by this or is afraid of it, they don't need to be. This can be dealt with. Dr. Cohen, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with your audience.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to share something cute. Mother's Day is coming up, and I know so many of you are going to be celebrating with the ladies in your life who are most significant. And I wanted to share this cute little story that I came across. It was shared by a Robert Boyer from Indiana. That during a science lesson, his sister-in-law picked up a magnet and was talking to her second-grade class. She said, "My name begins with the letter M, and I pick things up. What am I?" Little boy in the room said, "You're a mommy." Yes, I thought that was cute. He knew his M's, and that's for mom. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. If you have a question, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight, I will be delighted to do exactly that. I wanted to chat with you a little bit today about some wonderful things that are coming up with technology, and some of these items have been thought about for a long time, but this one, I could not get past this one. I think of a friend that I knew who you could have three alarm clocks going off and nothing would budge her. I mean, this was amazing. I'll never forget staying at her home. I was a guest there for about a week, and these alarms were going off, and I just thought, oh my goodness, what's happening in the house? Well, she was such a sound sleeper that the alarms wouldn't wake her. Well, today, if you have someone in your family who is of that dispositioning, there is an item called Clocky. Now, it's going to cost you $45, but it will shoot off of your nightstand and roll around on the floor, forcing you to chase it to turn it off. If it doesn't wake you up, they're not sure what will. And I look at this apparatus, and it looks like this little tiny robot with two wheels. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I wonder if that would work very well with teenagers or if they'd crush it, you know, the first day that you had it. But I thought, oh, my goodness, that is, my friend wasn't the only person that had a hard time getting up in the morning. And also, and people come up with some of the most whimsical things, but I'll share some of those later on. Automation. Well, it's in so many areas of our life. And I can remember seeing on a program where we were eventually going to have cars that we're going to drive ourselves. And, you know, this has been talked about for a long, long, long time. Disney had a concept and worked with futuristic engineers and put out how we could have something in the roadways that would be like a magnetic strip, and we'd sit in our cars and we could turn our seats around and play cards while we punched in our destination and off we went. Well, I don't know that that would be effective in today's world. The cost would be prohibitive to put it on all the roadways in the world. However, this is something that people have thought about for a long time. How do you have a car that you program? Now that we're really big time into the computer age, it'll get you from point A to point B, and you don't have to worry about driving. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we're going to have a long way to go. Jetsons, well, even good old Jetson in the cartoon series, he had to pay attention when he was flying his wonderful vehicle. That's another thing I'm waiting for. It's one of those. I'd like mine in bright red. Thank you very much. But anyway, the cars that drive themselves and getting to the point where a driver doesn't have to pay attention, that's, we've got a long way to go on that. There's more than 30,000 people that die on U.S. roads each year. Vehicle collisions are the leading cause of death for those between the ages of 5 and 34. And minor crashes, well, they take just as much time and effort and create just as much stress as major ones. And drivers themselves are responsible for 93% of U.S. vehicle collisions. What does it cost the citizens of the U.S.? We'll try $299.5 billion a year. That is a huge sum of money. Well, little by little, technology is advancing. And personal mobility, well, it's something that is going to be here in different ways. What is one of the biggest causes of automobile accidents? Tailgating. That's right. It's very easy to spot those people that do exactly that. In certain parts of the country, you will actually get a ticket if you're found tailgating. And what is that? It's like you're a foot away from the car in front of you. You're in such a hurry that you don't give yourself the length of distance between you and the vehicle that is recommended, and you're just anxious, and you're right there bumper to bumper. Well, if something happens in front of you, even if you have the space, somebody's tailgating, they're going to ram right into you because they don't have enough space to stop in. Now, there is something that's coming out with self-driving vehicles, and YouTube, apparently there's a video on it that over 4 million people have visited. They have been showing a Toyota Prius with a spinning sensor assembly mounted to the roof at a fellow's home. And though he's in the driver's seat, he doesn't touch the steering wheel as he visits a drive-through restaurant and the dry cleaners. Now, the guy's name is Steve Mahan. Shows him getting out of his car to pick up his clothes. He gets his white cane from the back seat. Of course, that means that he cannot see. He's blind. And here he is getting around in a vehicle. Well, apparently, there is a lot of optimism. They feel that these cars that will have the sensors will be out and about in about 5 years. Audi is working on it. Lexus, they're just really paying attention to a lot of things. And they've been going through a lot of study. And they say, some of the researchers say, it's going to take us a good 10 years before we're going to do it. Self-driving cars, some of the technologies, well, they can park themselves right now. rear-end collisions and inadvertent lane changes are being reduced or prevented in a growing number of vehicles that are equipped with advanced driver assist systems. Mm-hmm. This is something that is growing and growing. Vehicles are going to automatically come equipped with them eventually. And there's all kinds of companies like Microsoft, Airbiquity, VoiceBox Technologies. My goodness, they are just right out there. They're wanting to make this happen. And then the U.S. Department of Defense is even involved in this. Mm-hmm. They want the deployment of self-driving vehicles in tactical settings. They say it works for drones, and they are going to try to develop it so that they can shuttle troops and contractors around on bases and eventually to and from their homes to their bases. So Congress already jump-started domestic research and development of autonomous vehicle technology in 2001. Why did they do this? Because they have a goal. Armed forces to have one-third of its ground combat vehicles be unmanned by 2015. I think of the movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger was in called The Red Planet. Did you happen to see that? Well, in there was the robotic driver, and you go from point A to point B in the movie. And I forget how many years ago that was put out. But this is what they're talking about. This is what's coming up. So someone had the inside track on some of the technologies that were already being worked on and just putting it in a sci-fi setting. Really fascinating stuff. So if you're like me, though, you go, well, that's very nice, but what happens if a computer chip goes bad? Mm-hmm. Well, it won't work. It might freeze up on you. So just be aware that these are things that are evolving, good, bad, or indifferent. It's definitely going to have an effect on our lives and change this world that we live in a phenomenal, phenomenal way. And I just thought I would share that with you because, again, I'm always intrigued with how science fiction, those people that work with the movies, that bring these things out in a visual, that many times they're way ahead of what people would expect them to be. And Steven Spielberg, in one of his movies, I think it was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, by golly, they were investigating him because of everything that he had put in the movie. It was so close to some stuff that was already known secretly. Mm-hmm. Amazing, isn't it? I just love it. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break in just a minute. However, I want to let you know tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Stephen Booner. Now, we're going to be talking about Lyme disease and how you can heal co-infections. I'll tell you, I've gone through this book, not totally. I haven't finished it. I will by tomorrow. Wow, what an education. Bacteria. How do they mutate? What happens in your body? Why is it that so many of the medications that were so effective in the past aren't working today? Like TB. We have all kinds of things that have mutated. Well, those little things we cannot see, bacteria, various organisms, they're invisible to us. They have intelligence, and they know how to change the game. That's right. So we're going to be learning about that tomorrow. Next week, we'll be talking about surviving domestic violence. Would you like to know how to win in Vegas? Well, we're going to be talking about that next week. Lost history of little people, cultures that may be remaining, but they were very prevalent at one time. And if you're creative, how can you make a difference in life with that wonderful creativity? We'll be finding about that. And also how you can use crafting in a very special way. So we've just got a wonderful lineup of guests. I hope you'll join us and tell your friends about the show. We'd be delighted to have you become a part of the listening family for the Donna Sebo Show. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in if you'd like to chat with me is 888-627-6008. Well, if you're looking for a job and you're wanting to find one that is going to be unique, also one that is going to pay extremely well, well, I've got a few that I came across. They really pay very, very good money. Now, you may chuckle to yourself and say, Donna, you're really reaching on some of this, but not necessarily so. One of the jobs is becoming a pearl diver. If you don't like to swim, this isn't going to do for you. But in the deep blue sea, off of Australia, pearls. Yes, they want divers that will go down. They'll pay you as much as $1,200 a day for your diving. Think about it. If you're young, strong, and you think you can handle the depths, by golly, it'll work. Also, if you are a person that's really, really good with computer, they might call you a cyber geek. There are so many companies that would love to hire you. And there's a lot of people that get into doing stuff illegally. Well, my goodness, they don't have to do it illegally. They can make really good money being legal, preventing other crooks from invading the computer systems, from hacking them, helping companies to see about holes in their security. Well, a top certified ethical hacker, that's right, that's what you'd be called, can earn $125,000 a year, and usually you have to have a bachelor's degree in computer science or information technology. If you like a real sense of adventure, become a technician on an oil rig. That's right, you can make $1,500 a week as a diver and up to $90,000 a year on full-time jobs where you would be building rigs and laying pipes on the ocean floor. And also, if you're really gutsy and you have what I call an Indiana Jones attitude for adventure, airplane repossession. That's right, I'd never heard of it. I didn't even know this job existed. Aircraft repossessors can earn commissions equal to 6 to 10% of the resale value of a plane, which means you get a plane worth millions of dollars, and one plane can bring you $900,000. Of course, it depends on what country you're in. So like I said, you've got to have the spirit of an Indiana Jones. Bounty hunters. Now, this is something that is a whole world that many of us don't even get into. And having done an interview regarding bounty hunting and the Bond people, all of this, it's really an amazing world. Dangerous? Absolutely. But the pay ranges from 10 to 45% of your quarry's bail deposit. A suspect who skips out on a $100,000 bail could net a bounty hunter $10,000 to $45,000 upon his or her return. So when you're watching those shows on television about bounty hunters, just know they're doing it because there is good money in it, but there's a lot of high risk with it too. Submarine cook. Now this one, you know that every ship always has to have a cook. And if you're in a submarine, you're underwater a lot, well, all you have to do is first move to Australia. And those chefs that work in the Australian submarines receive a base pay of at least $50,000 with an additional $140,000 in annual bonuses and allowances because the job is critical to the Navy. No kidding. You have a lousy cook, you're going to have a very upset crew. You have a good cook on board, man, you're going to have happy people. So a good cook is imperative. Also, if you'd want to do voiceover work, there's an opportunity for that. You can earn in 5 minutes $325. And even someone that's not so famous can pull in $50,000 to $80,000 a year doing voiceover work. So there are some jobs for you. If you've wondered about the unusual, the unique, well, keep looking. There is a book at the library, and it is huge. It gives information on just every profession that is listed in the United States. Go to your local librarian. And if you sort of feel stumped about what you can get into, remember, there are literally millions of different types of opportunities that you may not even know about. So get to know your friendly librarian. She has insights on so many things, and you'll be so glad you did. Cultivating the friendship of a good librarian is worth its weight in gold and then some, because they can save you so much time, effort, and energy. And if you need to learn something about the computer, usually they already know about it. It's good stuff. I love libraries. Now, if you've got an automobile and you are wanting to be sure that you avoid scams, how many of us really know that much about our automobile? Well, a heck of a lot of us don't. And all we know is we want to get in the vehicle, turn the key, and get moving. That's it. We know about oil changes and other things. Well, I came across some information regarding what we have to watch for regarding a particular scam. And we all know that you have to flush the radiator periodically. Well, what about an engine flush? Fuel injector cleaning? Gas-saving devices? Auto transmission flush? What do you think about those? Has anybody ever told you you need to have it every time you go in? Well, according to Jim Wang, and his website is bargaineering.com, he said engine flushes only after you've driven the car for a lot of years. And when you lift up your oil cap, if you're going to put some oil in your car, lift up that oil cap. And if there is a lot of gunk there, then that's time for an engine flush. Otherwise, don't bother. It is just a rip. Oil dirty? Mm-mm. It's not dirty. If you don't have a lot of that gunk up there in that cap, your oil isn't dirty. All you need is an oil change. Filters, that's another thing. You may need to change that. Fuel injector cleaning, but they have to usually have well over 100,000 miles. And if someone says, and you've only driven your car about 20,000 miles, that your fuel injector is dirty, forget it. You don't need to worry about that at all. If you think there is a problem, then you can play it safe and add a fuel injector cleaner to your gas tank during the next time you go to fill up with gasoline. And if you buy good quality gas and have a fairly new car, you probably don't need to have the cleaning anyway. Gas-saving devices, well, according to Jim, he said they really don't work. And he said just be wise, drive well, avoid unnecessary braking, don't carry a lot of weight in your car, and you're going to be fine. Transmission fluid, he said, nah, you don't need the flush. You have to be well over 60,000 miles, and he said most cars have filters that keep the transmission fluid flowing freely. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Tomorrow, well, we'll be talking about Lyme disease, and I think you'll learn some interesting facts relative to that. I so appreciate your being with me today, and I want you to know that wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And while you're at it, when you know that, shine. Smile. Be a bright light. Because even if you're not feeling so hot, you just don't know how that magic of you is going to affect and brighten somebody else's day. Enjoy it. Life is good. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you again for being with me. I'll be here tomorrow, same time, same place. Won't you join me? Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.